Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
They're still counting ballots in Iraq, but we're getting reports that it's a close race. Too close. In a country that needs decisive leadership, it appears there's a three-way split in the votes. In a country that needs a clear winner, they have ambiguity. Al Jazeera, though, says there's no chance that Nouri al-Maliki will win a second term as prime minister.
So it is no accident that warnings of massive election fraud have been issued by many politicians. More ominously, the vice president al-Hashimi has warned that if al-Maliki loses the election, he just might engineer a military coup d'etat.
Not great news for the American forces who are hoping to leave Iraq soon. After the last election, it took 5 months for Iraq to form a new government. Will it take longer this time? It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Friday, March 12th. Welcome back to New York, John.
Good morning, Celeste. The wheels in democracy there in Iraq move pretty darn
slow. But you're coming from a place in Florida where there's been a few problems.
Florida's doing better than Iraq.
That is absolutely.
For sure. Let's get a check of the top headlines this morning. After fighting for nearly a decade, a settlement has now been reached for more than 10,000 responders sickened by dust from the destroyed World Trade Center after 9/11. The cops, firefighters, and construction workers would share $657 million. Joe Paulette, who researches the environmental impact of the attack, tells the BBC thousands developed breathing difficulties because of dust.
I feel tremendous relief. The Ground Zero workers have had devastating consequences.
A judge still has to sign off on the settlement, and the rescue workers themselves have to agree. Meanwhile, across the Hudson River, a New Jersey man suspected of being an Al-Qaeda member worked at several nuclear power plants for years. Michael Druniak, press secretary for Governor Chris Christie, says Sharif Mobley passed all the necessary background checks.
He was last employed there in 2008, and the best of the reports that we've received, there are no known issues with him, you know, and he certainly didn't have direct access to nuclear material.
Nevertheless, Mobley was arrested in Yemen last week with 10 other Al-Qaeda suspects.
Preliminary results from Iraq's election show a close race, and there are, of course, fraud allegations from both sides. That was expected. For the latest news, we're joined by Anthony Shadid. He's the New York Times correspondent in Baghdad. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning.
So what are you hearing from the Iraqi people themselves about these allegations of fraud? Do they feel the election was fair?
You know, I think there was a sense even before the election that there was going to be some level of fraud. The question was how much. You know, there's still a lot of anticipation here about the results coming out, but there's also been a little bit of uncertainty the past couple of days with these allegations of fraud.
And do they expect, in the past couple of days, do they expect a clear winner to emerge?
You know, we've already seen some delays in the vote counting. Now, we had originally heard that we would have the results, at least preliminary results, which would give us a good indication of the landscape here by Wednesday or Thursday. That didn't happen. We only have very, very preliminary results, and they're impartial at that. You know, electoral officials say that we may have more complete results by next week. But one thing to remember, especially in a country like Iraq, which is often very suspicious and, you know, sometimes doubtful of what leaders are saying, the longer we wait for these results, the more you're going to hear of, questions about the integrity of the process, doubts about, the legitimacy of the results. So it could be an uncertain period in the days ahead.
Okay, Anthony Shadid, we'll be back with you in just a moment.
House Democrats in Washington say they'll meet later today to continue working on resolving disputes over President Obama's health care overhaul plan. And let's look at the markets. Asian markets are mixed. European indices up. Futures are flat. The Dow gets underway at 10,611. The S&P opens at 1,150. And the NASDAQ opens at 2,368. And we have a reminder for people, right?
Right. It's daylight savings time on Sunday. Spring forward. Spring ahead. Set your clock ahead.
Which got us thinking. I mean,
what about time?
Exactly.
How is time valuable for you? And we want to ask our listeners today, what do you wish there was more time for? Give us a call at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can post to our site, thetakeaway.org. What do you need more time for?
You
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Well, we've gotten very preliminary results from the election in Iraq. The results we got do not include Baghdad, that accounts for 70 of the parliament's 325 seats, but they do show a very tight three-way race between the current Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki and the secular coalition led by former Prime Minister Ayad Alawi. Both sides are claiming fraud. Some people say that they saw ballots thrown into the garbage. Nobody knows how credible those claims are. Anthony Shadid joins us again. He's the New York Times correspondent in Baghdad. So, Anthony, how are we seeing these results falling down in this three-way split? Where are these votes coming out?
Well, you know, it's still, like you mentioned, a race that's too close to call. We are seeing some results come from the south, a couple of provinces in the center of the country and the north. But to reach any conclusions off the results that have at least been made public would be really difficult at this time. We do understand from those that we've spoken to that we've seen a broader tally of these results, that the race is exceedingly close. And one thing I think you can read from that is that if that does prove to be the case, if it does bear out with the rest of the results, Prime Minister Maliki wouldn't have received the popular mandate that he hoped to have. And he may have needed that mandate to put together a coalition government that he would lead. So we may see just so far in the earliest returns, I think we're seeing that Prime Minister Maliki seems to have done, or at least to have the hardest time with what he's seeing.
We have not heard from al-Maliki since the election. He was supposedly in the hospital for surgery, and he has not been heard from since. Is that still true?
That's right. It's actually an interesting development that we've seen here over the past week. He hasn't appeared in public since the election on Sunday. We just found out yesterday in a government statement that was somewhat cryptic that he actually had undergone surgery. It turns out that he went into the hospital the day before for a two-hour operation to remove a cyst from his stomach. But again, I think this adds to the uncertainty that we've talked a little bit about. Maliki has receded from public, a very close race, too tight to call absolutely right now, and now some mounting allegations of fraud, which has definitely overcast the whole process.
Okay, we're going to talk more about that in a moment. Thanks so much, Anthony Shadid. He's the New York Times correspondent in Baghdad. And now let's turn to someone who actually voted in the election. Raed Jarar is an architect in Washington, D.C. He came here from Iraq in 2005 and carries dual passports. Good morning, Raed.
Good morning.
You cast a ballot in the election, and now that you're hearing these accusations of fraud, how seriously are you taking these accusations?
Very seriously. I have been expecting this even before the election. The Iraqi Electoral Commission is seen as partial and controlled by the current ruling parties. And unfortunately, inside and outside the country, there was a lack of international monitors this time. So I have been writing about the possibilities of fraud in the election for the last few weeks. And unfortunately now, we are hearing more and more calls of fraud that happened during the election and now during the counting process.
And in this, did you expect these kind of close results? Did you think that these divisions in the country would show up as an extremely tight race when the election results started to be counted?
Yes, I did. I think the only reason why we have these tight results is that Mr. al-Maliki ended up not running in the same coalition as Mr. Al-Hakim and the Sadrists, which are the other ruling parties. So the Al-Maliki and the other ruling parties ended up splitting the same pool of votes. I thought they will get anywhere between 23% and 25% each, and Dr. Alawi's coalition is getting around 25%. So they are running very, very close to each other. In addition to the preliminary results that started to be announced yesterday, there was an exit poll announced 2 days ago that also showed extremely clear, extremely close race between the al-Maliki's coalition and Alawi's coalition. There is less than 2% difference between them for the overall votes all around the country.
And it could be till next week till we get an answer. That's Arad Jarar, an architect living in D.C. He voted in the Iraqi election, holds dual passports. And now let's turn to Brian Katulis. He's a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Brian, we often see allegations of fraud. Sometimes they're called before an election has even opened and ballot boxes have started collecting ballots. How credible are these reports?
Well, Celeste, I think it's just way too early to tell. And my hope is that the institutions in Iraq can handle and deal with these allegations. We'll just have to wait and see. You know, Iraqiya, the coalition led by Alawi, has listed, I think, a pretty long list of violations, saying votes have been removed from boxes, replacement of votes in other places. But we just have to wait and see how widespread this is, because in transition elections like these, in early transitions, you often get these sorts of allegations, and my hope is that the election commission in Iraq will look at all these and adjudicate properly.
So far, we've heard the Western government say that they have no evidence whatsoever, no credible evidence that there was fraud. However, they were predicting beforehand that there would be not just allegations, but there would be some kind of vote tampering. What? How will we know if the vote is decisive?
Well, I think one indicator will be the domestic monitors. Raed properly said that there weren't any international monitors, and I'm just baffled as to why that did not occur. I think it was unfortunate that in these early transition elections, and this is the second full election in Iraq, they had another election for a transitional government, a third one. But I don't know why there weren't monitors, but at least there were monitors from the Iraqi side. And I think once all of the information is collected, and then importantly, when the votes are tabulated, we'll have a closer sign of whether the tabulations are a fit with what the Iraqi monitor saw or not. And again, that's going to take a matter of days, if not more weeks.
Brian Katulis, how long before we know we have a clear winner?
I think we'll probably have a sense. Well, first, there'll be no clear winner in these elections. The system is a parliamentary system with proportional representation. It's designed to promote consensus.
Could it be months?
It could be.
Okay.
We'll know results. We'll have a pretty good idea by next week.
Okay,
they'll be certified
Brian Katulis
by the end of the month.
Is a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. Thanks. And at 15 minutes after the hour, let's check in now on the headlines.
The wife of Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid was seriously injured in an accident yesterday. Landra Reid has a broken back and neck. Reid's daughter was also in the car but has been released from the hospital. Virginia State Police spokesperson Corrine Geller says
both were transported by ambulance to Fairfax Inova Hospital, and their injuries do not appear to be life-threatening at this time.
The driver of a tractor-trailer involved in the accident has been charged with reckless driving. Overseas police in the Pakistani city of Lahore say two suicide bomb attacks have killed at least 39 people. The target of the attacks appears to have been army vehicles. That death toll has been rising quickly this morning.
Mexico became the first Latin American country to marry gay couples yesterday. That's despite criticism from the Roman Catholic Church. And finally, back at home, President Obama is donating his Nobel Peace Prize money to a number of organizations he says, quote, do extraordinary work. Part of the $1.4 million will go to Fisher House, a national nonprofit for veterans' families. Chairman Ken Fisher says he's excited about the president's donation.
I can't put into words how grateful I am to be recognized, or the foundation to be recognized in this way.
Among the other recipients, $200,000 for the Bush Clinton Haiti Fund. That's a look at some of the stories that we're watching this morning. Coming up, the state of Virginia wants to opt out of mandated health coverage, but can one state ignore federal law?
Let me tell you how far back this debate goes. We had a civil war over this debate.
Are we talking about a civil war or a political war? We're going to get details from our D.C. correspondent, Todd Zwillick, in just a few minutes.
What's your take? Leave a comment at thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
869-8253.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.